All right, guys, welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. We are doing another reboot today, and this one I think just didn't get enough attention. And I mean the idea of timeout trees and just how simple, intuitive, and what a massive scaling benefit they could provide. And this is why I think CTV is the important thing, the next, probably the last important primitive to have in Bitcoin, where you can have a UTXO that has segmented out or incremental ownership. And that the systems that you could build with this aren't some massive, you know, necessarily complex or giant multi-layered things. It could just be a simple, okay, well, now you can open up channels with 50 different people all at once in a single UTXO and make the assumption that those channels exist, and then just have them expire and have to refresh it before expiration. The simplicity of this idea, I think, is really undervalued. And with maybe just another one or two little pieces of complexity, you could make this far, far more interesting and potentially less reliant on you'll see when we get into the episode, and I talk about a lot of this after, but I just thought this was a really good episode, and I wanted to refresh this one, because this is an idea that I think we should not stop talking about. I believe this is the scaling primitive that is needed to really give that compounding effect to everything that we have in Bitcoin right now, and start closing in the little gaps in the complexity of things that are already running, like Lightning, and making it more intuitive and more robust. So we're going to bring back this piece from Shinobi on a solution to scaling Lightning. And don't forget to check out the Blockstream Jade Plus hardware wallet. You can get 10% off with my code GUY. Link and details are right down in the show notes. And if you want a good Bitcoin on-chain and Lightning wallet that is self-custody and has a built-in LSP, so it's super easy to use. You either have it in your savings or your spending. Super intuitive, great for onboarding. You are looking for the BitKit mobile wallet. Check it out. Again, link right down there in the show notes. With that, I'm going to go spend some time with Rad. I hope you guys enjoy this. Let's dive in. John Law's timeout trees is a very concrete and specific proposal for a channel factory design that actually attempts to address the real issues of use and implementation instead of a half-defined and vague concept. That is a massive progress in terms of addressing Lightning's long-term scaling limitations. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. We have got a fascinating read today. We are actually right back in with Shinobi on Bitcoin Magazine, because there is a fascinating new proposal, which is actually a pretty simple proposal that uses covenants, that uses CTVs, to essentially create another scaling potential, to create another order of magnitude scaling for the Lightning Network. So how do you scale Lightning Network LSPs so that you have you knock a zero off the on-chain footprint even for LSPs and all of the subsequent users for LSPs? It's a really fascinating and really simple design created by John Law. And so Shinobi breaks it down in this article, and then we will talk about it. I'll try to give my, you know, analogies and try to make sense of it afterward if there's any confusion. And I really want to talk about the kind of dynamic, like how this changes the social power hierarchy, so to speak, when it comes to providing services and scaling ownership of the Bitcoin system. Now, I also will have an episode. This intro is being done well after the episode and Guy's Take were recorded. So I don't have the recent Lightning bug had not actually occurred yet. So I'm going to be doing a deep dive on that probably next episode, but very soon regardless. I'm going through a lot of different material and the proposed solutions and all of these things. And what's funny is it's not I mean, it is a bug. It's more of an exploit. It's not like a off by one, like somebody screwed up the code bug. It's more of a how is the system designed such that you enforce the rightful owner in an HTLC? And that's why it seemed pretty scary at first, and kind of is pretty scary, because it's kind of fundamental to the way we secure ownership, or we enforce who the rightful owner is in a payment that is routed through the Lightning Network. But it's actually a really fascinating thing, and it informs a lot about how the mempool works and why mempool policy is actually really important. So we will dig into it. Like I said, I have a lot of links and stuff that I've collected on it, and we will be covering it in the next couple of episodes. However, we won't be covering it today because all of this stuff was recorded before that happened. But this episode is a really, really cool article about a Lightning scaling solution. And also, I will mention this again at the end, but anybody who knows me knows that, or listened to the show for a minute and a half, knows that I am an avid reader. And so I'm going to start recommending, and in fact, I did this for a while and I just kind of forgot about it. I guess there wasn't really an incentive to do so if I wasn't particularly on the topic of recommending books and the things that I read and the stuff that I find like super, super valuable. And I hope to get my Bitcoiners required reading list back online. But there's a really cool service, which I'll talk about again at the very end of the episode, called Prodcast. It's prodcast.io. So prodcast.io. And whenever I recommend a book, it should automatically show up there, which is really, really neat. I'll explain it a little bit at the very end of the show. But the one that I just finished the audiobook like the night before last while I was putting Rad to sleep. But it's really good. In fact, I might actually listen to this one again, because internalizing this is probably going to be absolutely like just worth absolute gold. But it's a book called Atomic Habits, but it's breaking down a very practical approach to controlling your habits rather than letting your habits control you, and to think about why it is that your habits develop and how they essentially kind of come to dominate things. But it's just a really, really cool mental model. So anyway, check that one out. All right, guys, let's get into today's read on a new practical solution to the scaling of the Lightning Network. And it's titled Timeout Trees, a solution to scaling Lightning Network LSPs. John Law's timeout tree proposal is one of the first concrete designs for a channel factory to address Lightning's scaling limitations. Written by Shinobi. One of the biggest inherent limitations to the Lightning Network is the limited number of channels that can be opened or closed per block, given the block size limit. Regardless of how many transactions can occur off-chain how cheaply, this is a fundamental bottleneck, restricting how many people could actually realistically use the Lightning Network. Even the Lightning Network white paper went through in the conclusion that in a scenario where the entire world's population of 7 billion was using Lightning, with only 2 on-chain transactions a year per person, Bitcoin would require 133 megabyte blocks for Lightning to work. This isn't some out-of-left-field problem or unpredictable issue. It was a limitation of the protocol design fully understood from day one. Part of the plan to address this issue has always been the idea of channel factories, i.e. a type of channel that more than 2 users participated in. This was always the direction things would have to go in order to scale Lightning and Bitcoin without a block size increase. But the issue is that solving the problem of on-chain footprints introduces a whole host of other problems. First of all, nothing fundamental changes about the requirement to enforce intermediate states if a counterparty becomes non-responsive. This has implications for the value add. The entire point of a channel factory is that, for example, 20 people can share one UTXO and rearrange the liquidity inside with the other 20 people however they want. Once someone closes out on-chain non-cooperatively, this starts to interfere with that goal. If I close out my channel inside a channel factory, I drag a bunch of people with me out of the factory. Think of a factory like a Merkle tree. There's one UTXO at the top, and that splits in half off-chain, and those split in half, etc., until we get to everyone's individual channels.
Once I peel my channel out of the factory, everyone on my side of each split that goes on chain is now cut off from everyone else in the factory. They can no longer reorganize their liquidity into that part of the group if everyone cooperates. Another big issue is that even to start one, you need to have everyone online at the beginning to pre-sign all the transactions. If you want 20 people in a factory, everyone needs to be online to start it. If you want 1,000 people, 1,000 people need to be online, etc. This makes Channel Factories a big design space full of lots of problems to solve. So we solve an existing problem for Lightning, but make a bunch of new ones. Sounds like engineering to me. Timeout trees. John Law's recent proposal, Timeout Trees, attempts to offer a solution to the one core issue of channel factories. I wouldn't quite call a timeout tree a channel factory, more of a proto-factory, but it offers a potential solution to the issue of opening and closing massive amounts of channels without introducing the problem of non-cooperative closes ruining the use of the factory for other users. It requires Check Template Verify, or CTV, and a Lightning Service Provider, an LSP, in order to work functionally. A timeout tree is essentially a channel factory guaranteed by covenants, with no ability to change how the liquidity is reorganized off-chain after it is made, with a special escape clause. An LSP, we'll call them Bob, plays the role of bridging casual users into the wider Lightning network. Bob can take coins that he controls and creates a CTV tree that creates a single UTXO, unfurling to open channels to any arbitrary number of users of his LSP service. The nice thing about CTV is it enables this to be done without everyone being online at the same time. Bob can simply get everyone to sign their initial channel state one at a time and hold on to them until everyone has set up the channel, and just spend the funds into the CTV tree when he has channels set up with every user. This addresses the problem of everyone having to be online at the same time in order to set up the, quote, factory and start using Lightning. Because of CTV, once Bob spins coins into the tree setting up everyone's Lightning channels, there is no way for him to back out and take the coins yet. With that first UTXO in the CTV confirmed on-chain, everyone can treat their channels as open, and there is no risk of them being double spent. Now the last part, closing the channels. Even though opening them only requires a single UTXO on-chain because of CTV, closing them would still require the entire CTV tree to unfurl on-chain, so everyone can submit their channel states, right? Wrong. This is the timeout part of timeout trees. Every branch in the timeout tree has a script branch where Bob can sweep all of the funds after the time lock. Now, I'm sure you're thinking, what? This is the real genius of how this proposal works. Because Bob can sweep the on-chain UTXOs himself without anyone else after the time lock, these channels all have an expiration date unless users actually unfurl the whole tree and confirm the real channel funding on-chain. This allows Bob to do something neat. When that time lock is coming up, he can open a brand new timeout tree with all of the users of the current one and have them move all of their funds from the expiring tree into the new one entirely off-chain on Lightning, and then sweep the single on-chain UTXO of the last tree. This allows for efficient closing of all these channels on-chain. The only problem left now is enforcing an HTLC on-chain if the other party stops cooperating. Well, that isn't really an issue in this case, or rather, it's an all-or-nothing issue. The reason channels have to be closed to enforce an HTLC is if the other party of the channel stops responding in the middle of routing it. In a timeout tree, every single user's counterpart is Bob. So if Bob, as long as he is being honest, is not responding to update a failed or successful HTLC for one user, he's not responding for any other user either. In that case, everyone can still close out their channels on-chain before the timeout and stop using Bob's LSP. Wrapping up. Users will still have to pay fees for on-chain transactions. There is no way around that. And an entire timeout tree closing out on-chain non-cooperatively would be a large and expensive on-chain footprint. But this is ultimately an issue any multi-party channel system will have to address. Timeout trees, however, does have compelling solutions to the cooperative case of both opening and closing a massive multi-party channel without degrading the trust model of the system to something custodial. John has, even in his most recent version of the paper, proposed a scheme where users could be penalized for non-cooperative closures enough to cover Bob's cost for eventually sweeping a bunch of fragmented tree UTXOs after the timeout. Potentially, there are ways to do the reverse if Bob's inactivity or dishonesty is the cause for users having to non-cooperatively close their part of the tree. At the end of the day, though, this is a very concrete and specific proposal for a channel factory design that actually attempts to address the real issues of use and implementation instead of a half-defined and vague concept. That is massive progress in terms of addressing Lightning's long-term scaling limitations. All right, so as soon as this article landed, I know we literally just did another one with Shinobi on a different development that came out recently, but this is a big deal just because, you know, what Shinobi said is we've talked about all of these payment pools and all of these things that CTV could do. Check Template Verify, which is the soft fork that, you know, was like loosely proposed and debated, hotly debated like a year or two ago. And something that we talked about quite a bit on this show because I was trying to sort out how exactly it worked. And we're trying to sort out the noise, just the nonsense on Twitter and the drama from the actual truth of how this thing worked and what it was good for. And I was shockingly surprised how little focus or how poorly it was explained the benefits of it. And I think it was more that it was kind of the technical side and the relationship that it enabled was the primary focus, rather than really digging into the depth of the amount of application, the ways that we could use this as a user, what it was going to be able to do. But after I read at length the payment pool concept and the congestion control transactions, and then after we discussed ARC is another great example of some of the ways that you can utilize this technology. You can utilize this means of committing to an explicit transaction after you move it to a UTXO so that nothing else can happen to it. And the real key that Shinobi hits, or I think makes clear in this article, but that I want to reiterate, is the fact that it is non-interactive. You can just give your information, you can just give the signed address, like where you want it to go, the transaction that you want it to pay out to an LSP, to a, you know, transaction compression service, to a pool or community of users and funds that are trying to aggregate these transactions. And then they can slowly pull all of these things together before they can then broadcast the transaction, broadcast the UTXO that commits to exactly this output and balance that you have already previously agreed to. And you don't have to be there. Not everybody has to be there all at once. And I love in this one, what it is essentially it's leaving a branch in this setup so that the entire thing can be recycled, so that if no one forcibly exits from the agreement, no one takes their unilateral path out, well, then the entire thing can be rolled over into another UTXO with all new commitments. And so, and maybe this wasn't entirely clear, but just so I can make it very clear, what is happening is the UTXO, what's being committed to, so we're talking about one address and one balance from an LSP, from somebody who is providing a Lightning liquidity service and opening channels with people. That one address basically has a tree of script, of committed data hidden behind it, so to speak, that only this, without this information, without these legitimate transactions with these balances that have been committed to, you can't spend that UTXO. So that UTXO has to go to address A with 0.1 Bitcoin, address B with 0.2 Bitcoin, address C with 2.1 Bitcoin, et cetera, et cetera. Even though the UTXO, the one address on the chain, just has one signature and, you know, a balance of 10 Bitcoin. You can't see that all of this other information, all of these other transactions that now have to take place in order to leave that UTXO, to leave that address, all of them must take place if you want to send from that UTXO. So instead of simply committing to, you know, just paying out a balance to an address, what happens is that the LSP in this situation is committing to opening channels with everyone. So when you use an LSP, when you're connecting to Breeze or Async and the Phoenix wallet or BitKit and the Synonym, I forget what their LSP is called, or the Blix wallet, there's just a ton of wallets, right? And the LSP has slowly become the dominant model for ease of use and to make this just work. Well, what they do is currently they open up a channel every time you don't have the liquidity to receive a payment, and they just do it automatically. So it's a new address, a new channel online. Like, so a great example is, let me actually just open up my Phoenix wallet right now and I'll see how many channels I have. I haven't even checked in a little while. So, all right, we're in settings here, payment channels. I have 13 channels. So I have slowly built up channels over time, 13 times, roughly. I'm sure at some point some of them have closed and then reopened, but that at certain subsets of time, they had to open up entirely new channels because I received a payment that was slightly too large. And so a new channel with new liquidity had to be paid or had to be created with my node or with my wallet. But it's all being managed behind the scenes, and I don't even have to know. Like, if I didn't know that that was even there and that I could check it or that I could actually do anything with those individual channels, it wouldn't matter. I don't think about it when I'm using it. Now, there is also splicing, which is slowly becoming, is slowly being implemented in a pretty big way, which is really, really exciting to see that come about. And I think the new Phoenix is going to be very, very soon. And what that does is that actually just constantly updates a single channel. And this actually saves a ton of signature space and UTXO space, like address space, because you can actually, quote unquote, close and reopen the new channel with splicing. And I think it takes like a third of the amount of data, if I'm not mistaken. And that's just in the normal transaction. That's aside from the fact that you don't end up with a second channel. So it's a huge data cost, and it just ends up making it so that essentially every user only has one channel, which is going to be a whole lot easier to deal with as well. Now, what this does basically an order of magnitude improvement to that. So the idea of a timeout tree is that you send the total amount of Bitcoin for, let's say, 100 different people's channels into a single UTXO, and you commit to the fact that the only thing you can do with that UTXO is then open up all of those channels. So just in the same way that when you're doing Lightning payments, you open up a channel and then you do a bunch of payments, and essentially because you have the ability to go to chain with every individual payment, you don't then ever need to go to the chain. Because the very fact that you have that capability is what enforces the fact that you can just keep updating it between your channel partner, and you just know that neither one of you can cheat. You make the assumption that it is already yours, that ownership has already been transferred, because that's the only thing that you can do with it. And that if they try to challenge it, well, then you're just going to steal their Bitcoin, because that's, you know, the Lightning contract. So even though it's not on chain in an address yet, it is assumed owned by the user. Well, this is the same thing, except it's assumed that the channel is opened and owned, but you never actually have to open the channel on chain. What you do is you commit to the fact that the only thing you can do with this UTXO is open the channel. So it's like a giant batch of channels compressed into a single address and balance. But here's the thing, because it expires, You can open the channels and do a bunch of transactions and participate in the Lightning Network as if that channel is already on chain, because there is a transaction on chain that says the only thing that can happen is that you have this channel with this balance. But the whole thing expires. And the LSP, the service provider that you're using with, if they never cheat, well, then now they can sweep the entire thing again. And what you do is you give them the updated, maybe you don't want as much liquidity in your channel now. Maybe you want to take some of it out, like just like you would with splicing. You want more liquidity at some point because you need to receive more payments, or you want less liquidity because you want to send some to your cold storage. You want to toss some over to your cold card just so that it's not, you don't need the liquidity anymore. Maybe the Bitcoin price doubled and now you got way too much in your Lightning wallet. Whatever, doesn't matter. Now the entire thing can just be rolled over into another one without ever having to open the channel. The cooperative close is that 100 channels that never had to touch on chain now get rolled over into 100 new channels with whatever new liquidity is needed, whatever adjustments are desired by all of the separate users, and simply over time, they just have to initiate the information, the UTXO and the balances and everything, and sign and send over the new signed stuff for the new CTV. And best of all, it's non-interactive, so they can just kind of ongoing do it in an ongoing process. That's really one of the best things about CTV, in my opinion, is the granular control over who controls or who owns what balance, because you can always exit to the chain with that amount. You've basically got the right to do that. And then the fact that it is non-interactive. You don't have to be there actively signing with other people. You just give them the relevant information. You have your interaction with them, and then they can take it and they can combine it with other people's, with a larger pool of funds, and you don't have to be there or care about all of the other people in the pool. In fact, with the entire tree, like the tree could have thousands of people in it and you don't even necessarily know or care, just as long as you have your piece, the branch that you are a part of, so that you can always take it to the chain. And what's really cool about this is that the CTV itself can also be a toward a Fediment or toward another payment pool, toward another Lightning timeout tree. So that you can basically nest these things. Again, this is all just within a UTXO. So here's kind of the brilliant piece of it, especially when we're talking about Fediment, because like one of the brilliant things about how I believe this will continue to scale is that we will scale trust. The really fascinating thing that we'll be able to accomplish in the kind of the ongoing future of this protocol and this layered stack is that we will remove the need to have permissioned regulatory custodians. We will be able to get back to permissionless local trust and organization. So what I mean by that is, and especially there's something I actually spoke with my brother just the other day, because we were talking about Pair Credit, which is built on top of the Keet, the protocol that Keet is built on top of on Hypercore. Granted, it doesn't exist yet. That's not entirely true. It exists kind of behind the scenes. They're working out all the kinks, and it appears that all of the pieces are going to work, but it doesn't exist in practice. Like, you can't go download it and play with it. But essentially, it's a means of having quote-unquote credit tokens without actually a blockchain and a consensus mechanism, because a credit token necessarily has an issuer, right? But there's something really interesting about being able to do that when you start looking at tools like BitVM. Is what if you can actually designate sub-ownership of a UTXO with this sort of a key management system inside of a BitVM? When we start talking about, going back to that previous episode and conceptualizing, trying to think about what you can do when you can actually execute arbitrary code for the ownership of a UTXO or within a tree of script, so much stuff becomes possible, and you can layer it with some of these broader things like the timeout tree. But aside from that, let's just call it a Fediment, let's call it a payment pool, whatever you want to do. You could just have a timeout tree within a timeout tree. But just as an example, is that I could be a banking and payment service provider. So I know the tools vastly better than anybody in my peer group, like my friends and family. And I manage the keys really well. I you know, have systems for this, and I think about and I know the attack surface and the vectors, and I could also easily partner with other people in our group to have a sort of multi-sig where we could divide up the risk and the exposure in the case of someone, myself or anybody, being hacked in the group. But by doing that, I could actually do this within a timeout tree of like the Breeze LSP, you know, because essentially it's quote unquote my UTXO, and they don't have to know or care what's happening inside my UTXO. They just know that this goes to me if this particular balance goes to me if anything goes wrong. But what I am able to do is take an even more local. So the LSP is a little bit like business oriented, right? They're a little bit, they're further distant from me. And, you know, it's a company, you know, wherever the jurisdiction is, it doesn't really matter. I can just connect to anybody in the world. But it is, it's not somebody that I can generally call on the phone, right? It's a service out there on the Lightning Network that I might Google them and, you know, find the Breeze SDK and be like, all right, well, I'll just use them for my app. Whereas in the other scenario, when we take another layer down and we're talking about my community group, this is all people who know each other. This is all people who are friends and family who get together on the holidays. This is far more akin to the kind of late 1800s financial fraternities that existed and the family trust model where, and I don't mean that in trust in like, oh, we trust each other. I mean, it trust in like the legal institution, the financial, the funds that were kind of like a locally controlled or dealt with estate sort of thing. But just think about the level of barrier that is being removed, like how the scope of provision, the ability to provide and localize a service, like it's night and day. It's literally from completely shifting from top down to bottom up. There is nobody on planet Earth that can stop me and my family and my local community from having this relationship and splitting any apparent fees for the ownership of that UTXO. So if it takes $100 every time we want to update this UTXO and change ownership or, you know, do our own little local LSP, well, what if we have 100 people in our extended family that we are doing this with? Well, then it only costs a dollar anytime we're making any change. And even better, if we're doing this within a timeout tree of an LSP, well, then we're only splitting it with a dollar of one out of 1,000 that's in this timeout tree, which we only ever need if something goes wrong, which means that we as a community can go to the chain to enforce our ownership from a provider, from a banking Lightning Network and global payment network service provider from any jurisdiction in the world for like a dollar a pop. We can basically go to the global monetary Supreme Court and get incontestable ownership of our funds without anybody else's permission. And think about the shift. You know, one of the big things about why I believe society is kind of breaking down, and something that you see very commonly when you look in history, and particularly in the democratic socialist era, kind of in the last like 100-150 years, where this idea of the majority rule and this idea of the state being your parent, like we've really messed up, like just corrupted this odd relationship. And what ends up happening is the breakdown of the family is you get more and more management, more and more micro control and kind of totalitarian systems that are further and further distant from the people that they actually govern. You know, you don't have the slightest bit of control, a slightest bit of genuine knowledge as to who the hell the people are that are 3,000 miles away determining how to spend $6 trillion in some bullshit bill that's 6,000 pages long, and not one asshole in that giant room of just corrupt sacks of shit even read the thing, could even read it. The feedback mechanism for anything going wrong, for the corruption, for the level of waste that is in that system is practically impotent. It's no wonder society ends up breaking down the further and further we go into that structure as being the dominant mode of organization and the dominant arena by which we believe we should be settling social issues. But it's very deeply connected to the breakdown of the family and the family's power, the power of the family to actually set up their own systems and to basically create their own sovereignty, their own little bubble of the structures and the systems and the monetary security that they need amongst themselves, and their ability to communicate to get that connection to the broader network has just been completely eliminated. Like, it's just, we've just kind of been, the family has genuinely been removed from the stack and relegated entirely to the social sphere. But that is actually aggressively shifting back. Because of the permissionless and the censorship-resistant nature of Bitcoin, and the fact that we can provide these services, we can provide privacy, we can provide quote-unquote compression services, we can provide payment and connections into the global payment networks and smart contracts and even the asset management, we can create a great example is Pear Credit, is that everybody in our family should be able to easily manage credit amongst each other. Like, that's the whole reason credit actually worked. You know, this is one of the things actually in monetary history, is a lot of people talk about how barter was the original form of trade, and that's actually not really true. Barter was only used in very rare cases because, and it was specifically between societies, it was between tribes, it was between, you know, when the British came to North America, they would barter, but very, very quickly you would actually have kind of dominant goods like leather, guns, very fundamental and critical goods would become the dominant form of trade extremely quickly. And it's for exactly the reason that the monetary history is explained as to why a money emerges and to begin with, is because barter is so inefficient at scale. When you're talking about trying to barter between 100, 200, 300, 1,000 people between different societies, it's so unbelievably inefficient that it almost never emerges. So we kind of have this thing is that we have to solve the problem of barter, but we don't really have to solve the problem of barter because barter is so shitty that it literally just doesn't really ever manifest at scale by itself, because that's just how bad it is. We always end up with some sort of monetary good. However, when we're talking about communities, when we're talking about smaller communities within the Dunbar's number, within that, you know, 150 people that you can actually mentally hold kind of the series of connections and relationships between each other, because, you know, it's n squared, right, is the number of every time you add one new person to a group of 100 people, well, then you now have 100 relationships to understand. And then when it's 101, you have 101 new relationships to add every single time, even though you're only adding one person, because you don't have to just understand your relationship to them. You have to understand their relationship to your spouse and to your best friend and to your parents, and then your parents' relationship with each other, et cetera, et cetera. Like, you just, the number of relationships and social intricacies and complications and conflicts that have to be understood and dealt with just grows exponentially every single time you add just one more person to the group. That's why you have Dunbar's number. Tribes stay in 100, 150, 200 people. And it's specifically because it just doesn't scale well. After you get to 1,000 people without like extremely strict, like kind of traditions and, you know, religious and values, value rule sets to begin to keep the community together, because you have something external to the social relationships to kind of create a barrier, to create a structure, so that I mean, that's what these things are. Religions are scaling technologies. Traditions are scaling technologies for communities that can't actually understand the totality of the relationships between each other. Money is the quintessential scaling technology of economic systems, of civilization, because it can bridge across traditions, it can bridge across religions. If you can trust the money independently, you can have people who speak different languages, have different values, have different traditions, and if the money continues to do its job, you can still engage in efficient and vastly, like broadly cooperative trade. Society doesn't exist without money. But again, going back to the Dunbar's number, going back to the community, the first money wasn't barter, or the first means of trade wasn't barter, it was social credit. It was the ability to trade with the person, a person that you know. You know, if you and your friend are, you know, you do something for your friend, you just kind of have this natural tally in your mind. I scratch your back, you scratch mine. The first money always was and has been a form of social credit, but that only works to the degree that social interactions scale. It just stops at 100, 150 people. It breaks down. But within that zone, it's actually a really important mechanism. And the crazy thing about having this totem, this global, integrated, decentralized, canonical truth of economic rules and proof of economic ownership, you can actually scale all the way back down to where the community and the family, the local community and the family, take precedence as the dominant power, as the dominant mode of organization and control of the actual capital of society. Now, a transition like that is going to take 2 generations, 3 generations to actually play out. But it's just crazy to think, because the world just looks fundamentally different on the other side of this. Because this kind of toxic bigness, where everything is just huge and everything's corporations and everything's, you know, the nation state, is actually an anomaly in history. When you go back to the 1700s, it was the family. It was these local communities. And unlike some distant, faceless, I don't know anything about them and nobody is even responsive to me, government apparatus that's 3,000 miles away and you've never even met any of the people in it. The feedback, the ability to actually get what you want or to push back against inconsistencies, corruption, and these things at that scale is almost non-existent. Your participation might as well be meaningless. And in fact, so much of the entire political apparatus is trying to convince you that your complete lack of power is actually meaningful. And when you go out and vote and you beg for someone else to do what you want the government to do, is to make you feel empowered. When your politician comes in, you won the day. You're the one who succeeded. You're a part of something bigger than yourself, when in reality, we've done absolutely nothing and we have no meaningful effect whatsoever. We have orders of magnitude more effect simply by voting with our feet and voting with where we put our money. And the political apparatus is the dominant means by which those two things are restricted, where your money is taken from you and given to big corporation A, B, and C, even though you despise them. Where your money, your capital, and your resources that you produce in the world get flooded and sucked up by the banking system that you believe is corrupt and is cheating you 6 ways from sideways, and literally locks down your ability to even exit from the system. It is the exact opposite of empowerment. It is enslavement. Now, imagine a world where you can actually scale a bottom-up system of financial, payment, and ownership security provision, services, whose entire trust model is built locally with your community and people that you know and you work with and you do business with and that you trust, but remains connected to every other individual and community in the entire world without a central authority or any permissioned exchange or even possible censorship as soon as you scale outside of your local community and family. Today, all of the trust flows up to the top of the system. It is all reliant on this distant central bank, on these distant political institutions. In the reverse, all of the trust would be entirely local, and you could completely avoid trusting anything outside of the scale of 200 or 300 people. Anyway, just a interesting way to think about the how the dynamic completely shifts because of the bottom-up potentiality, or the potential of the bottom-up scaling of all of these technologies. I mean, obviously, reality is going to be a giant mix of all of it, right? It's just that we've never really had the bottom-up, the local first scaling and global connectedness dynamic has just never even been there. It's not been a part of the equation for like 200 years. And that will be an insanely powerful force for keeping giant corporations, giant routing nodes, giant city states and nation states in check, because families and local communities can simply exit. They can exit in place. And I don't see how that is anything but aggressively revolutionary, like revolutionary in an insane sense. But anyway, got a little sidetracked. Timeout trees are a fascinating and rather simple, concrete conception of how you can use CTV to produce essentially an entirely new layer of operating with Lightning and operating with these alternative secondary, like second and third layer sort of payment networks. And it's really exciting to see work being done on it, and I'm really excited to see CTV come to actually, but I really think CTV is critical. I mean, obviously it's just Covenants in general, and it seems pretty clear that at some point the next soft fork is going to include this. I think it makes no sense at all to even go with another soft fork unless this is a part of it, because this is such a critical piece of the puzzle when it comes to breaking down UTXO ownership, a single UTXO and a single balance, breaking it down for, you know, granular ownership of individual amounts to tons and tons of different people. But this is such a perfect example of just a very, very concrete way that this can be used to get another order of magnitude scaling on top of the Lightning Network. So another thank you to Shinobi for almost always being the first one out with an explanation and a Bitcoin Magazine article on this one. A big thank you to Bitcoin Magazine for having it being a really reliable resource. Like, there's a reason why, you know, I have the emails and notifications come in, because inevitably, even before I manage to get to something, when I learn about it, it seems like Shinobi or anybody on Bitcoin Magazine, there seems to be an article out for it, somebody breaking it down. And I, as a avid reader, really, really appreciate that, because it helps me make sense of things, and hopefully that helps you make sense of things. So thank you guys so much. Don't forget to check out Atomic Habits. It's a really, really good book. I just finished it. It's just such a good book for building a mental model about your habits and how to structure things to make your habits what you want them to be, rather than having your habits control you and what you do. Just a really good book. But if you check it out on Prodcast, that's prodcast.com, also a link I will have in the show notes, you can actually find all of the books that I have mentioned, the stuff that I recommend reading. This is a really cool service that is actually a way to support the show by purchasing my recommendations, the things that I recommend on the show, through the Prodcast website. This thing is actually built by a fellow Bitcoiner and a really good friend of mine. And it is such a cool idea, is that, you know, I recommend reading material and stuff all the time. I listen to an audiobook every week or two, maybe, depending on, you know, how much time I have available to me. But the service basically listens to my episode with just a speech recognition AI, catches any products or books or anything that I recommend, and then lists them on this website. So I don't have to keep the links. I don't have to remember what it is that I was recommending. And like I said, it's a way to help support the show, because when you purchase through it, it's not the cheapest place to purchase it, by the way. It specifically adds a couple of bucks to the actual purchase, explicitly as a means to support the podcast. But it's just such a neat idea. And we kind of, like, I went back and forth with Daniel Hinton, who's actually also with the UTX Oracle. He and Steve have been working on that project, but he has also been doing Prodcast. And we kind of talked back and forth, and like went over a bunch of ideas. And it's just such a neat concept, and I want to try it out. So I'll have the prodcast.io, by the way, the prodcast.io link in the show notes, for if you ever hear me recommend anything, I'll try to make sure it shows up there. And hopefully the AI does its job and catches them all. But if not, it's something that we can manually add. And obviously there will need to be tweaks and improvements as things go on. But check it out, prodcast.io/Bitcoin Audible. But if you see, it's like actually right on the front page right now. But I'll have the link to it right in the show notes. Again, thank you guys so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe. Check out our amazing sponsors. I am Guy Swan, and I will catch you on the next episode. Until then, take it easy, guys. Believe in something and not to live it is dishonest. Mahatma Gandhi.